We're here on Daf Chaf Aleph Amid Beis. Now we're up to Maskif Law Rav Ashi, and that's about halfway through the Amud. But in order to appreciate Maskif Law Rav Ashi, the first word in the Lord is V'yachad. We have to just review what we know about Rav Huna. Rav Huna was the one who said, and the sugi, of course, that we're studying is Kiyum Shtaros, that if, let's say, you have a bezdin made up of three judges that have to give a kiyum, a henpek on the shtar, and two out of the three judges recognize the signatures of the two edim that are signed on the get, then they can testify in front of the third dayan, and the three of them now form a bezdin, and they can attach a henpek and authenticate the shtar. And the Gemara derives from Rav Huna three conclusions. Conclusion number one is that Eid Nasa Dayan, that even though two out of the three of the Dayanim are functioning in a dual capacity, they're both Eidim testifying on the authenticity of these signatures, and they're functioning as Dayanim, it doesn't matter. An Eid can be at the same time a Dayan. The second conclusion that we wanted to derive is that the Dayanim, since they recognize the Chasimus of the Eidim, they do not have to testify in that we recognize the signature, meaning that they don't testify vis-a-vis themselves. They just testify vis-a-vis the third Dayan. I mean, that's going to be clarified in the sugya as we go along right now.
They testify to the third Dayan?
Right. In other words, what they do is the two Dayanim will testify in front of the third Dayan, and now we have three Dayanim who recognize the signatures, they form a bezdin, and they could write the henpek. And the third conclusion here, Shema Mina, is Dayanim She'en Makirin Chasimus Yedei Edim, that if the Dayanim did not recognize the signatures, then Tzrichim Lahoed Bifnei Kol Echav Yechad, then every Dayan in that case would have to hear and accept testimony about the veracity of the shtar. The only reason why there was no need for these two Dayanim to receive testimony is because they themselves recognize the signatures. So that's what this is what we want to study today. Maskif Law Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi has the following question. I can understand the first of the three conclusions that we derive from Rav Huna. Bishleim, I can understand that Eid Nasa Dayan, Shamina Mine, we certainly could derive this from Rav Huna, because according to Rav Huna, two out of the three Dayanim recognize the signatures of the witnesses, and they're going to testify in front of the third Dayan. So they're playing a double role. They're both Eidim and Dayanim. Ella, but the second derivation that we wanted to conclude based on Rav Huna, namely, that Dayanim HaMakirim Chasimos Yidei Edim, is Ein Tzrichim Lahoed Bifneihem, there's no need for their receiving testimony, since they themselves, you have it, they themselves know personally, they recognize, they're able to make a personal recognition of the chasimos, right? So so two of the dayanim are going to be mekayim the shtar, even though there was no testimony which they received. They're actually giving testimony, they're not receiving testimony. Because again, since Rav Huna says that two dayanim who recognize the signatures, they can sign as two out of the three dayanim on the kiyum hashtar, on the henpek, and yet there was no edus other than their own personal knowledge that was given in their presence. The Gemara says, I don't understand how you could derive that from Rav Huna. Dilma, Li'olam, Emelcha, in general, I would tell you that even according to Rav Huna, that despite the fact that these Dayanim, these judges know and they recognize the signatures on the shtar, tzrichim, they need edim, they need witnesses to testify in front of them. V'shaini hacha, but here it's different. Why? Dika mekayma hagada b'chad. Because there is a hagadas edus. in this case, the two Dayanim are testifying in front of the third Dayan, so the Beis Din has a Kabbalas Eidus. But let's say, for example, you would have a case where all three Dayanim recognize the two signatures on the Shtar. In that case, even Rav Huna would agree that you're going to have to introduce two other Eidim to testify in front of the three. In other words, Beis Din can't be Mekayim the Shtar without the following precondition being fulfilled, namely that there be some sort of Eidus in front of the Beis Din. Now, the Eidus in front of the Beis Din doesn't have to be in front of all three Dayanim, because Rav Huna's point was, since two out of the three Dayanim on this Beis Din know personally that these signatures are authentic, therefore they don't have to receive Eidus, but the Beis Din as an entity has to receive Eidus. And therefore, since two out of the three witnesses recognize the signature on the Shtar, they will stand up and testify in front of the third Dayan. And now this Beis Din as a whole, when it signs the henpek and verifies the Shtar, has received Eidus. But in a case where you have no testimony whatsoever within the context of this Beis Din, even Rav Huna would agree that you've got to introduce two Eidim to testify in front of this Beis Din about the authenticity of the Shtar, of the signatures.
Does that mean if one of the three recognize, they just have to get one aid with them?
If one of the three would recognize, then he would have to find another aid, join up with the other aid, testify in front of the other two Dayanim, and then he could sign the handpeg as one of the three Dayanim of the Beis Din. But there's always got to be a minimum of one Hagadas Eidus for this Beis Din that's going to issue the handpeg. So that the second conclusion that we wanted to derive from Rav Huna is not really well-founded. It's not justified, because what the Gemara originally wanted to derive from Rav Huna is that if the Dayanim, let's say all three Dayanim, would recognize the signatures of these two Eidim on the Shtar, they don't need any Eidus at all. They could just simply be Mekayim the Shtar and issue the Henpek. That's not true. Rav Huna does require that the Beis Din receive Eidus. In the case of Rav Huna, it's enough that one out of the three Dayanim receives the Eidus that was testified in front of them by the other two Dayanim, but at least there was a kiyum of this requirement, this precondition of Eidus in front of the Beis Din.
In the case of three, like all three judges recognizing it, why can't...
So now you would have to introduce another two Eidus to testify in front of them.
Why can't two just testify against one?
Oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Two can testify in front of one.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Now we get to the third derivation from Rav Huna. And that too is problematic, says Rav Ashi. Why? V'dayonim she'ein makirin chasimos yidei ha'edim tzrichim lahoid bifnei kol echad v'echad. What we derived from Rav Huna was that any Dayan who sits on this Beis Din that's going to issue the henpeg, if he does not recognize the signatures, he needs testimony. Dilma, says the Gemara, that's not so. Perhaps Li'olam Emilchai could argue Ein Tzrichim. It's not an absolute requirement that any Dayan who wants to participate in this henpeg has to receive Eidus. Maybe that's not so. And therefore, even if the Eidim who recognize the signatures on the Shtar will testify in front of two Dayanim, the third Dayan could join together with the two Dayanim and form the third member of this tribunal, of this court, and issue the henpeg. V'shaini hachan, here you'll ask me, well, why do we need then that the two Dayanim testify in front of the third Dayan? And the answer is, the lo kama kaimi agada klal. Because otherwise, if they don't testify in front of the third Dayan, there's no Eidus whatsoever. And as we said before, it's a precondition in henpeg that there's got to be testimony to verify the signatures in front of the Beis Din. Beis Din can't issue a henpeg unless there is some sort of Eidus. But it doesn't mean that every single member of this court, every single Dayan of the three Dayanim, has to hear Eidus. It's enough if two out of the three Dayanim hear Eidus. And then the third Dayan, relying on the first two Dayanim, can join together and issue the henpeg. Yosef Ravi Abba v'ka'omer lo l'hashmaita di'eid nasa Dayan. Ravi Abba was studying this sugya of Rav Huna, from which we derive the conclusion that the single person could serve in two capacities. He could be both an aid and a Dayan. And he was very upset about this. Why? Esvei Rav Safra l'Rabbi Abba. Rav Safra was listening to this shir that was given by Rabbi Abba, and he asked him the following question. This deals with the case of Kiddush HaChodesh. Kiddush HaChodesh, in the original formulation, which is called Kiddush Al Pi Re'iyah, requires the testimony of two Edim that saw the Levana B'chidusha, you know, that they saw the beginning of the waxing of the moon. Now, what happens if the witnesses who saw the moon are also members of the court, and they want to join together and function not only as Edim, but also as Dayanim, and declare Mekudosh, Mekudosh, Mekudosh? So the Mishnah says in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chafei Amid Beis the following: Ra'uhu Shloshes, meaning Shlosha Dayanim, three Dayanim saw the new moon. Vehein Bezdin, and they all three are members of the court of that Sanhedrin Akhtana, which is made up of three judges, and therefore they are Sherim, meaning they are valid in two capacities. Namely, they could at the same time be witnesses that testify about the moon, and at the same time they could wear their hats as judges, as Dayanim. However, the Mishnah stipulates the following condition: Yamdu Shnayim, two out of the three judges have to stand up. The Yoshivu, and they need two other Dayanim, Mechavrehem, who are members of this Sanhedrin, Eitzal HaYochid, to join together with the third. So again, one Dayan of the three that saw the new moon is going to function as a Dayan. Two of the Dayanim cannot function as the other two Dayanim and at the same time testify about the new moon. They're going to have to invite two other witnesses to testify in front of this Bezdin. And then, the Yamdu Bifneim, after these two Dayanim who saw the new moon testify in front of the three Dayanim, because they attached two other Dayanim to the third Dayan, two Dayanim from this Bezdin, the Yomer, and then, and only then, can they declare Mekudosh HaKodesh Mekudosh. It means that the three Edim, even though they're members of the court, and they therefore are worthy of serving as a Bezdin, they can't do so. Why? Because they cannot serve in two capacities. They cannot be both Edim and Dayanim at the same time. And the Mishnah ends by saying She'ein Hayochid Nemon Al Yidei Atzma, meaning that if they only testify, these two Dayanim, in front of one Dayan, that's not acceptable. We need two other Dayanim to form a Bezdin. In other words, there's no way, no how, that two out of the three of Dayanim could be joined up to the Bezdin and function as part of the Bezdin to make up this Bezdin if they are testifying. So the only way that they could testify is if they replace their own chairs with two other Dayanim from the Bezdin. So obviously the underlying rule upon which this Mishnah is predicated is Ein Eid Naisa Dayan. If Eid could be a Dayan, then there would be no need to add two other members of the court, you know, take them out of the benches and bring them in to form the Bezdin, because they themselves know, they have personal knowledge of the Levana B'chidusha. The Isalka Daitoth, this is Rav Safra, you know, finishing up his presentation, his question. The Eid Nasa Dayan, Lomali Kuli Hai, why do we have to bring two other Dayanim to add to the third Dayan to make up a Bezdin? Lesu Beduch Tayyar Velakadshe, why can't they just sit down and be Makadish the Chodesh? Because all three of them are not only Dayanim, but also are witnesses because they saw the Levana Bechidusha. Fine. Now, okay, this might get complicated, but I'll just mention here in the notes, he points out that if you go through the sugya in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chaf Hei, the sugya says that when it says Leisvu Biduchtayu Vilakachi, what it really means is that two out of the three Edim will serve as Edim and Dayanim if you hold Eid Nasa Dayan. And they will testify in front of the third Dayan, which is exactly the paradigm of Rav Huna that we discussed before in Kiyum Shtaros. And the question that the Gemara raises is, well, if Eid Nasa Dayan, why do they have to bother testifying? Why not just say, Mekudosh, Mekudosh? All three of the Dayanim saw the Levana B'chidusha. Well, and the Gemara answers that we need a Kabbalah Seidus, that you cannot be Mekadesh Lechosh without a Kabbalah Seidus. And the Gemara speaks about a case where they saw the Levon at night, and there's no Eidus at night, so it was impossible for them to be Mekadesh Lechosh at night. They had to wait till the day because of this requirement of Haggadah Seidus.
This could be lost in Hanukkah. We've got a lot of Dayanim.
South Africans?
No, a lot of Dayanim.
No, Hanukkah is full of South Africans.
So what happens if you're in Madagascar? There's three Jews there.
I only know that from Risk when we used to play as kids. You go somewhere out there in the Far East.
There's three people stuck on a desert island. Well, they stuck there because they're on business. And they went into Aegis. For the
Kiddush HaChodesh? Are they Dayanim?
Yeah.
If they're Dayanim, that depends upon this sugya of Eid Nasadayim. And the Mishnah seems to codify the halacha that ain't Eid Nasadayim, that let's start it the other way, the Dayanim cannot at the same time fill the capacity as witnesses and also be Dayanim. So if there's only three out there in Madagascar, we're in trouble. Now, what does that mean? It becomes a mole by default, because every Kiddush HaKodesh is a choice between two alternatives. Either it's a chaser or a mole. It's either that the month is 29 days or it's 30 days. The whole purpose of Kiddush HaPiriyah is to establish that the previous month was a chaser and it only has 29 days. So in your particular scenario, that Chodesh would be by definition a mole, would be a 30-day month. There's no such thing as a 31-day month. In any event, so now we have a head-on collision here. On the one hand, Rav Huna seems to be assuming, in the case of Kiyum Shtoros, that Eid Nasadayin. On the other hand, the Mishnah in Kiddush HaChodesh assumes Ein Eid Nasadayin. How do we reconcile the two? Amaleis, or the Abba answers Rav Safra, Afle Didi Kashli, I had this question, Ushalte, and I asked this question, Rav Yitzchak. Now watch this Chagadya over here. He asked the question to Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Masna Bar Marta. Again, why we have to know his grandfather's name, I don't know. But Rav Yitzchak in turn raised the question to Rav Huna. Rav Huna didn't know the answer, so he asked the question to Chiyu Bar Rav. And Chiyu Bar Rav didn't know the answer, so he asked the question to Rav. Omar Lahu, finally Rav Chiyu has said to him the answer. What's the reconciliation? Hanachli Eidus HaChodesh De'oraisa Kiyum Shtaros De'rabbanan. So this is the punchline of the whole sugya that we learned today. That is a Dayan able to serve in the capacity as an aid, or the other way around, is an aid able to serve as the capacity of a Dayan? The answer is it depends. If you're dealing with Eidus De'oraisa, then that's not acceptable. Why? Because the Torah says V'omdu shnei ha'noshim lifnei Hashem, and the Gemara in Shmuel says shnei ha'noshim are referring to Edim. Lifnei Hashem is the Dayanim, and it means that the Edim have to stand in front of the Dayanim and they can't serve in both capacities to testify and receive the testimony and paskin the din. And therefore, on a Doraisa level, the Torah certainly requires two different capacities. Either be an aid or be a dai, but you can't be both at the same time. In the case of Kiddush HaChodesh, this is a case of Doraisa, of Eidus Doraisa, in order to establish the Kiddush HaChodesh. However, Kiyum Shtaros is only Derabbanan. And I reiterate what we've said over and over again, if you recall, that according to the famous dictum of Reish Lakish, Eidim Achzumim Al Shtar, Nasa Kamisha Nechkere Dusam Bebezdin. That means the Torah relies on the two signatures, and even if, for example, the Lova claims that there is a counterfeit here, we don't believe the Lova, because the Torah upgraded the status of a Shtar to that of two Eidim. It's two Eidim that were investigated. Mm-hmm. And after they were interrogated and investigated, we assume that everything is perfect and no one could be Matil Dofi, no one could create a question about the validity of the shtar. That's on a Doraisa level. The Rabbanon were afraid because what happened is over the course of time there was a ribui of Mizaifim. A lot of people started getting into the counterfeit business. And therefore the Rabbanon said, we're going to suspend the validity of the shtar until such time that we have kiyum. So therefore the whole process of kiyum is only a rabbinic requirement in the case of shtaros, because the Torah relies on the shtar. And in this context, we can allow for an aid to become a dayan. Now, I just want to make one comment here. Lufiani is daiti. I think what the Gemara is saying is that the requirement that the Edim be Edim and the Dayanim be Dayanim and never the overlap and overlap shall meet, that's halach in what we call psula guf. It's not halach in chashash sheker. I'll tell you why I derive this conclusion, because if it was halach of chashash sheker, if the Torah is disqualifying the Edim from being Dayanim and the Dayanim from being Edim because we're afraid of sheker, then I don't see why they would alleviate that requirement in the case of Eidus the Rabbanon of Kiyum Shtaros. Where do the Rabbanon have their kulos? Where do they bend the law, so to speak, and allow for a broader, more liberal acceptance of testimony? That's only with regard to what we call a psula guf. In other words, you have someone who's reliable, we have no reason to suspect that they're perjuring themselves, but the Torah passeled them. So the classical case of a psula guf is Gemara Baba Basra about Moshe V'Aaron. Mm-hmm. Now Moshe V'Aaron, if they come to testify, we cannot accept their testimony.
They're brothers.
Krovim can't testify. But that's not a psul of chashash sheker. We have no reason to believe that Moshe and Aaron are colluding here on some sort of falsification of the truth, but rather it's a psula guf. It's what you might call a technical foul in basketball. And if it's a technical, then the Rabbanon could look aside and they could upgrade the status of a technical to Edom Ksherim. And the classical example of that is the Gemara in Perek Shishi of Yevamos, where the Gemara says that we can rely on the testimony of Psulim in the case of a husband that's lost out at sea, let's say. Oh, it's, wow. Okay, I don't think any of the three were married. But anyway, just thinking, you know, when you talk about lost at sea, it's only because of these submarines and stuff like that. Also, the Kinneret is somewhat limited, but imagine if somebody gets lost out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So in such a case, the Chachamim will rely on Edom that technically are not Ksherim. That's called B'makom Igun Hikilu Rabbanon. But again, only in the case of someone who's not Choshed Al Sheker. If he's Choshed Al Sheker, then even the Rabbanon won't rely on his Edus. Yeah, so for example, we have many psulim which are only psuli aguf in Edus, like an Isha's psuli Edus, a Melech is psuli Edus. These are all technical, Krovim in certain cases. All these didim are only technical. So here, in the case of Kim Shtaris, they allowed for an aid to be a Dayan, because the Torah, when it disqualifies the aid from being a dayan, is not saying that therefore he's going to falsify the truth and issue a ruling based on sheker, but rather it's a technical psul. An aid is not a dayan. Fine. Omar Rabbi Abba Omar Rav Huna Marav Shlosha Sheyoshvu L'kayim Es Ashtar. So now the Malve is holding on to a shtar, claiming that the Lova owes him 1,000. And the Lova, for his part, is claiming Mizuyav. Ukara Irur al Echad Mehem. Now watch what happens. There are three members of this court. They have accepted testimony to validate the shtar. And now there's a question about one of the three Dayanim. That's called Kara Irur al Echad Mehem. Irur means whenever there's a casting of a shadow of a doubt on the validity of or the reliability of a certain individual in halacha, then that's called an error. And the Gemara is going to define exactly how this error comes about. But in any event, it comes out like this: that two out of the three members of the Beis Din are impeccable. There's no question about their kashrus. The third member of this Beis Din is now under question. He's under investigation. For example, let's say he's being accused of theft. Okay, in that case, he can no longer serve as a dayan because a ganav or a gazlan is possibly a dayan. In such a case, two out of the three members of the court want to testify against any evidence that's adduced against the third member of the court and testify that he is a kosher. And the statement of Rav goes as follows: Ad shelo chosmu, if they haven't yet signed on the henpeik, then they have, those two out of three have no vested interests, and therefore we believe that they're telling the truth about the third Dayan. Me'idim olav, they can testify and clear the record or the reputation of that third Dayan, and then Chosem, now they could all three together sign on the henpeik that validates the shtar. But Misha Chosmu, if they've already signed on the henpeik, all three Dayanim, and now there was an error about the kashus of one of the three Dayanim, Ein Me'idim olav, the other two Dayanim cannot testify, and then v'chosem, and then sign, because here we believe that they have vested interests. Mm. Because look what happened. They sat in a bezdin with someone who was posuliatus. And now they want to claim, no, he's not posuliatus. So they were, in a sense, their reputation is being tainted by virtue of the fact that they sat together with apostle Laganov in a bezdin. I mean, you don't want your reputation to be tainted. So what do? You testify, no, it couldn't be. The third Dayan is kosher v'yosher. He didn't steal anything. He's not a thief. And the Gemara says, in the name of Rav, that in such a case, we cannot believe the Edom. If the Dayanim has not yet signed, then that's called Achalo Chosmu, then Me'idim Olav, then they can testify, because then they're not considered Nogim B'Dover, they don't have a Negia and vested interests, because what they're doing is, they're saying that we're sitting together with this Dayan, and that is because we know that he's a Kosher, and accept our Edus, in order to allow us to sit with this third Dayan. In other words, they haven't yet functioned in the capacity of Dayanim, because they haven't yet signed the henpeik. The clincher which makes them into Dayanim is their signature attesting to the validity of the shtar. They haven't done so yet. So therefore, at this point, they have no vested interest in testifying on behalf of, you know, a character witness on behalf of clearing the reputation of the third Dayan. But once they signed already, which means that each Dayan, his reputation depends upon the other two Dayanim. Now for two Dayanim to try to clear the reputation of a third Dayan, now they have vested interest. Now they're Nogim B'Dover. So the Gemara says, I don't know what's going on over here. Irur Demai. What is the nature of this Irur on the third Dayan that makes him disqualified as a judge? Irur DeGazlanusa. If there are two witnesses who are testifying that we know that he was responsible for theft, and therefore he's disqualified as a Dayan, and now there are two other Dayanim who are contradicting these Edim, and they are testifying that he's not a Gazlan, says the Gemara, in this such a case, Rakov Beis Amin Aleph, Treyu Treinin Hu, we have two against two. Now in Halacha, when you have two against two, that creates a suffix. We have no way of tipping the scale in favor of this pair of Edom or that pair of Edom. It becomes an outstanding suffix. So what do you do in a case of a suffix? So this is a complicated halacha, but the bottom line is, just to straighten the record, that in a case of trey, we cannot rely on the kashrus of the dayan. Because what are we going to say? We're going to say, let's rely on the two edim that clear his reputation. Well, what about the two edim that are testifying that we know he stole? You can't disqualify those two edim and just ignore them. So how can you go ahead and be machshir this dayan, allowing him to function as a dayan, when there are two edim that say he's possible? Elo what? There are two dayanim who are testifying that he didn't steal. So what? Their maximum capacity is that of two edim. So we have trey, two against two.
Is this like a suffix d'oraisa l'chumra?
I think what it means is, yeah, suffix d'oraisa l'chumra, but let me just polish it up a drop if I can. That normally a person has a cheskes kashrus, meaning he's innocent until proven guilty. But in this case, what is that based on, innocent until proven guilty? That's based on chazakah. Chazakah cannot match up to Eidim. So therefore, no matter what evidence you'll adduce in favor of the kashrus of the Eidim, you always have... Oh, hi Benji, how you doing?
Well, nature of chazaka is that it's only b'makom safek.
Right, but chazaka does have a certain power in a case of a safek, to be machria, but not against two eidim.
Yeah, but eidos is more general. It's not just like
not only more general, but I would even go a step further. It's very powerful. Eidos is like omnipotent. You know, it's like God Himself. You know, you can't undermine two eidim.
Suffix after your lie, you're the suffix. You need a chazaka.
Good. So chazaka is a nice piece of evidence. But you know what? Let's call chazaka another witness.
Like Migo.
Call it two witnesses. Call it 1,000 witnesses. But the law is trei kemeah. No matter how many witnesses you have, they don't outweigh two witnesses. So in any event, even though he has a cheskes kashrus, but there are two eidim that are apostling him, and now he is disqualified. He can't serve as a dayan. So the Gemara doesn't understand what this means, that the two dayanim could testify and clear the reputation of the third dayan. Oh, but pgam mishpacha. Now pgam mishpacha is a code word for an evet, because an evet is not allowed to marry a Jewish girl until he gets shichru. And in this case, an evet is possible both for edus and for dayanus. And if that be the case, there are two witnesses that are testifying that we know that this person who's serving as a dayan is an evet. Now, if that be the case, the Gemara asks, Gili Milsa Bialmahu. What does this mean? We just finished saying that if the dayanim, all three of them, have already signed the henpeck, then we can't invite two out of the three dayanim to testify and be machsha the third dayan. Why? Because they're no gimadavah. And they may be lying, right? Because they don't want to taint their reputation having joined together with the third dayan who's possible to do it. That doesn't make any sense, says the Gemara. Why? Because their testimony is gili milsa bialma. What does that mean, gili milsa bialma? There are two types of testimonies in halacha. There's one testimony on a story that happened, an episode, an event that took place in the past. Then there's another kind of testimony, which is simply a fact-finding mission. That's not relevant just because of some incident that happened in the past, but it's relevant to now, to the status of a person.
Well, isn't status affected by some event, past event?
True. Okay, we'll have to come back to your question, Max. But suffice it to say that now the aedus is not on some sort of event that took place, but rather I'm testifying about this person that I know he comes from Yichus and he's not an Evet. That's called Gili Milsa B'Alma. And in the case of Gili Milsa B'Alma, the Gemara says there's no such thing as a Chashash Nogea B'Edus, that we don't believe you, we think you're perjuring, you're lying because you have vested interests. It's just a fact-finding mission. It's a Gili Milsa. Ultimately, we're going to come to a conclusion about whether this guy is an Evet or not. Was his mother Shifcha? What makes him into an Evet? So therefore, they should be believed, even if they signed on the henpeik, to be Machshir, the third Dayan. Why? Because they're not Edim. Their definition is not to function as Edim, but rather as Megale Davar, the Alma. So what is this case? So again, let's just go over the Mimonifshach. We'll form it. If there are two Edim that are testifying about this third Dayan that he's a Gazlan, then how in any event can the two other Edim qualify this Dayan because it's Trey Trey? And if on the other hand, the issue here is an Irv that he's an Eved, well, we're on a fact-finding mission. If these two Dayanim know that he's not an Eved, there's no reason to suspect that they're lying. That's called Gili Milsa. Li Olam Emelecha Arer de Gazlanus. So the Gemara pulls out a very sharp move over here. Really, in truth, the two Edom are testifying that we know that this Dayan stole money. Uka Amri Hani. And what is the counterclaim of the two Dayanim who are testifying to clear the reputation of the third Dayan? They admit that he's a Gazlan. They're not denying what the first two Edom testify. There's no Akhosha. But Rabbi Adin and Bey, the Avad Tshuva. We know that this Dayan did Tshuva, meaning when a Gazlan is possibly Edus or Ledayonus, that's only on a temporary basis. It's not a genetic change in his makeup. He's not forevermore possibly Edus or Ledayonus. He's only possible until such time that he does Tshuva. Once he does Tshuva, then he's reinstated as an aid kosher or as a dayan kosher. So there's no contradiction here between trey and trey. The second pair of Edom who qualify the dayan admit to the truth of the testimony of the first two Edom that indeed he was guilty of that crime of theft, but nevertheless he did tshuva. You know, you and I might have said, well, you know, who wants to go to a dayan that was once guilty of gzela? But the Torah of the halacha believes in the power of tshuva.
It doesn't have to be a counterfeit. It could be a person who's a gambler, professional gambler. He also can't be an aid. Then he decides he becomes a bal tshuva, and he doesn't go to the casinos anymore.
Correct. So there's always room for tshuva. But what exactly is tshuva? Here I have a long footnote about what constitutes tshuva to reinstate a gazlan as being kosher le'edus u'ledayonis. Some say that as long as he returns the gzela that he stole, that's enough. But the Rambam is much more machmir. The Rambam says, "Afal pisha hichzir es ha'gzela, eno chozel kashruso, ad sheyase tshuva sheyivada shechozer bo midarko hara." It means even though he was machzir the gzela, that's not considered tshuva gemura to reinstate him as a kosher aid or a kosher dayan until he does something lifnim mishuras adin. That's the Rambam shita. Now, what does it mean lifnim mishuras adin? Lifnim mishuras adin means when there's no reason why I'm liable, or while I am responsible to compensate you for a loss, I didn't do anything that constitutes a chiyuv nezikin. I was not a poshe, I was not negligent, but I'll compensate you anyway. Why? Because I want to do what's right. Such a person has cleared his reputation. But then he has another opinion. Yesh sovrim, Shedafka im kafu oso bezdin lahachzir es hagzela, then ein tshuvaso gmuro lachshiro. If we catch up to this gazla and then bezdin compels him to return the gzela, that's not called tshuva gmuro. Aval im hichzir es hagzela mirtzono below kvias bezdin. Bezdin wasn't involved, but he jumped the gun, so to speak, and he returned the gzela. Huchshar miyad, afal gavdalo nag lifnim mishuras adin. This is a Torah's chiddush in the Rambam, that the Rambam is talking about a classical case where we caught up to the thief and we threatened him that he better return the gzela. So he complied out of coercion, if you will. But he didn't come to do tshuva on his own will. Then the Rambam requires lifnim mishuras adin. But if he opted to take the first move and do tshuva, then, since it came from his own deep will, and it wasn't compelled and forced on him by Bezdin, he is a Baal Tshuva. Then he says the following. This is the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. Again, the Torah came before the Shulchan Aruch by a few centuries. And the Shulchan Aruch says the following. Im hayaragil ligzal pa'omim rabos. Give me an English term for that. He's a serial thief. Okay, he's a serial thief.
Kleptomaniac.
Okay. Hare afilu im heshiv belik fias bezdin, even if on his own will he returned the gzela, eno kosher, ad she yase tshuva v'yanhig lefnei mishuras hadin. Aval im gozal rak b'mikre v'lo b'kvius, if it was a one-time occurrence, Hare Miyad, immediately, if he returned the Gzela on his own initiative, Ukasha Ladun Ulahoyt. So we have two types of thieves. And the Nafkamina is going to be as far as tshuva.
What you call a habitual thief? And you
have habitual, okay, that's a good word. Serial, habitual.
Serial.
See, once you're a habitual thief, it's very hard to... See, tshuva has two parts to it. This I heard from my Rebbe. Tshuva has what's called kapara, and it also has tahara. The difference is that kapara is like if you owe me something, let's say you owe me 1,000, I can be mochel, and I can say you don't have to pay me. So every sinner owes HaKadosh Baruch Hu a punishment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could say, I'm mochel on that punishment. You don't have to pay me up. And that's called kapara. But then there's another dimension to tshuva, and that's tahara. what the Rambam is saying in terms of taking a thief and being machshir him ladun or lahayin is that you need a tshuva not of kapara, not this basic ground level of tshuva, but you need a tshuva of tara. For example, the Rambam says that you mentioned before, Brian, the case of Mesachim Bekubia. The Rambam says that if a Mesachim Bekubia wants to reinstate himself as an aid kosher, what he has to do is he has to go into his drawers and take out all those cards or whatever he used for the kuvia and rip them up, you know, make a public bonfire. And the Rambam speaks about mafricheyonim. You know, they used to have the way you made money was you bet on a race. You know, today we have horse racing, but in those days they had yona racing. You know, doves that which dove could be trained to fly. So there were all sorts of instruments that these mafriche yonim developed in order to enter into this competition and win the contest and win the reward. So the Rambam says if you want to be chozer v'tshuva on that, you have to destroy all those items, those instruments that you have. That's already a higher level, a more profound level of tshuva. The Rambam talks about tshuva gemura. Tshuva gemura means that basically you avoid all the background, all the situations that brought you to that avera.
Like a person who goes to casinos and he's a habitual gambler, all right?
Never.
So then Professor Twersky says we're taking to the casino. He's got to go to walk past the casino. Then you know that he's cured, or a person's an habitual gambler.
I would wonder if he's right about that. I don't think I would take him past the casino. That's too dangerous.
They're doing
that's like giving a cigarette to a chain smoker and saying, oh,
he's...
I don't know. Ultimately, they need someone.
But then how do you...
But addiction in the case of gambling is just completely wrecks a person's life and his family. Terrible.
But then how can someone give aidus on something like that? Like they witnessed them burning these things?
Yeah. There would have to be a court case in which they dug into their pocket and said, I'm going to pay even though Bezin found me exempt. Omar Abzera, Ha Milsa, Mirabi Abba, Shmili. Oh wait, did we do this already? Just one second. No. Okay, this is what I heard from Rabbi Abba. And V'ilav Rabbi Abba de Min Akko, there's another person whose also name was Rabbi Abba, but he came from Akko, and he was the one who reminded me of what I heard from Rabbi Abba. Shechachtia, I would have forgotten it. So he wants to give credit to Rabbi Abba for stimulating his memory. And what is the din that comes in the name of Rabbi Abba? Shlosha sheyoshvel kaim sashtar nebuch. After these three edim received all the testimony to verify the shtar, they're about to sign on the henpeg. Umeis echad mihem. One of the three dayonim died. So in this case, they didn't get a chance to sign all three of them on the henpeg, and one of them is gone. So what happens now? Is the kiyum shtar completely null and void? After all, we do have two dayanim who know that there was a third dayan who was ready to sign the shtar, but unfortunately he expired. Is trichim lemichtav, what they have to write in the henpeg, is b'mosav tlos avina. We were three dayanim and we accepted the testimony to be machshir the shtar. V'chad lesohi, and one is no longer, meaning one died. And this is important because if they write that there was a kiyum hashtar b'mosav shlosha, and in fact the third dayan died, then people are going to say, wait a minute, this is not a kiyum hashtar. What do you mean? So they have to indicate that there was a process of kiyum hashtar. The only thing that was absent was that final makom hapatish of signing the henpeg, and the third dayan is no longer with us. But Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak v'ikasav bei, if they wrote on the shtar, shtara dinan nafak l'kadmo bei dina, this shtar was mekuyam in front of our bezdin, and two out of the three signed because the third one is no longer alive. Sulo tzar, they don't have to add that there was a third dayan who died. Why? Because the very fact that they write that our bezdin was mekayim the shtar, that it indicates that there are three dayanim who are mekayim the shtar. So that even though Lamaisa there's only two signatures, but the statement of the two signatures testifies to the fact that there were three Dayanim. And I would say that this might be another example of Eid Nasa Dayan, because now the two signatures serve as Eidus. But again, you could always argue that that's generally the case.
Else.
That's generally the case, that whenever the Dayanim are signed on the henpeg, they're really testifying to the fact that they, as a Bezdim, were Makayim the Shtar. But the premise of this statement of Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok is that the word Bezdim, that concept, requires three Dayanim. And now the Gemara questions that. V'dilma Bezdin Chatzufu, this is a Mishnah Masechta Sanhedrin, that if two Dayanim decide a case and they hand down a ruling, that ruling is valid. Which means that even two Dayanim are sufficient to form a Chal Hashem Bezdin, except for one problem, they're a Bezdin Chatzuf. That's considered gaiva on their part. L'chatchila, we require three Dayanim. Two Dayanim is just as good as three Dayanim, you might argue, because even if the third Dayan would disagree as a dissenting view, it doesn't matter, he's outnumbered by the other two Dayanim. But still, nevertheless, the Bezdin has to decide as a Bezdin of Shlosha, otherwise they're called Bezdin Chatzuf. If two judges issued a verdict in a case, that's called a valid din, Elishan Nikra, but we call such a bezin chatzuf, because the takanas chachamim was that there should be three dayim and no less in a bezin. Now, getting back to the case where one of the three dayanim died, and the signature of the edim is to the effect that we, as a bezin, were makayim the shtar, how do you know that there was a third dayan there? Maybe we, as a bezin, means as a bezin chatzuf, of two Dayanim. And the Gemara answers, Dichsiv Bey, what it says in the henpeg is that this shtar was validated by Beidina de Rabbana Ashi, by the Bezdin, of Rav Ashi, meaning he was the presiding, president of the Bezdin. Again, I don't think the Gemara means only Rav Ashi, this is one example, but it means of some great scholar. And Rav Ashi would never have gone ahead and be Makayim Ashtar with only one other Dayan. He would not have allowed a Bezdin to be consisting of two Dayanim and not three, because that would be He'oza, that would be Chutzpah. So the Gemara says, I don't get it. V'dilma Rabbanan de Bei Rav Ashi Kiddush Shmuel Svirule. It's possible that the Bezdin of Rav Ashi hold like Shmuel, that as far as the Torah is concerned, all you need is two Dayanim. How do you know that when you write that it was a Bezdin Rav Ashi, it means there are three Dayanim? So the Gemara amends it a little bit. The Chsiv, because we're talking about a case where it says in the Shtar, and I'm going to read to you the whole Nusach HaShtar, it says, Shtara Dinan, Nafik L'Kadma, Beidina de Rav Ashi, V'Amar Lana, Rabbana Ashi. And Rav Ashi told us to go ahead and be Mekayim the Shtar. So it's not that we were just serving on the Bezdin Rav Ashi, because that could mean that there were two Dayanim who are Chutzpedik, but rather we were directed by Rav Ashi to go ahead and be Mekayim the Shtar. Rav Ashi would never have directed them to be Mekayim the Shtar if they were only two Dayanim, because that would be a Chutzpah. And now we start the new Mishnah. This is the famous Mishnah of HaPesha Asar, Hu HaPesha Hiti, which was the beginning of this parak, but now we're really getting into the thick of it. HaIsha, now who is this woman? This woman, as far as we know, was never married. She has what's called a Chezkas Pnuya. And she comes forward and she makes the following declaration. She'amra Eishes Ish HaYisi, that it's true that in the past I was married, but ugrushani, but I received a get, and now I'm a pnuya, I'm a grusha, and I can marry anyone, of course, but a kohen. So the Mishnah says nemenes. Now, normally, for a woman to say that, if she's a married woman, to say that she received a divorce, we're going to have to ask her for a get, with two witnesses signed on the get to testify that she was divorced. Otherwise, we can't allow her to get married because we know she's married. How do we know that she was divorced? So the answer is shapesha asara pesha hita, because we have no independent evidence to the fact that she was ever married. As far as we know, she had a cheskas pnuya. She was never married. Ella, what she told us and admitted to us that she was married. So it's only from her mouth that we know that she was married. Therefore, she's believed to say that she received a get. But if two witnesses will come forward and say, we know that she was married way back when, now she claims, but I received a get from my husband, now she can't be believed. She doesn't have a peshasa or peshahite, because the iser of zaneshes ish has been established by the testimony of two eidim. Aaron, did you want to?
Yeah, I was going to ask, why wouldn't we also think of asking her for her initial ketubah? Why would we only think of asking her only for the...
Well, again, we're not interested in the ketubah here because she's not coming to claim the ketubah. She's coming to claim that I can marry another man because I got a divorce from my first husband.
I don't know if she got married to begin with.
So Adarabba, you want to assume she was never married, then for sure you can marry her off. The only problem is that she admits that she was married. Once she admits she was married, she put her foot in her mouth. She now becomes a Pesha Asar. And once she becomes a Pesha Asar, then by her own admission, her own confession, she can't get married. No. The answer is she's also a Pesha Hit there, and she says, I received a get. The ksuba is not relevant. I thought you were going to ask me a different question. Where's he get? So she's going to obviously claim she lost the get. If she doesn't claim she lost the get, if she has the get and she can produce it, we don't need a pesh asa peshahita, because the get itself testifies that she received the get and she's a grusha. The problem is that the get is not here. It's not here, it's not there, it's nowhere. So what are we going to do here? She doesn't have witnesses to testify that she received the get. She's not holding on to the get. The only thing we have is her word. Why should we trust her? And the answer is because she has no cheskas eishesis to begin with until she admits that she was once married. That's called a pesh asar hu a peshahit. But all this is on condition on the fact that we have no independent evidence to the fact that she was married. If we know she was married and two witnesses testify to that effect, then she no longer has a pesh asar. And then we're going to say, cough up a get or get lost, buddy. We can't let you get married. Okay, now we have another case of pesh asar peshahit. This case, the woman says, Amra Nishbasi. Okay, now Nishbasi means she was taken captive by the Goyim, and the assumption is that a Shvuya is not allowed to marry a Kohen, because we're assuming that she was raped by one of the Goyim that captured her, and therefore, when a Goy has a relationship with a Jewish girl, she can no longer marry a Kohen. This is one of the, what I call the halachic tragedies. Because it has a tremendous impact on a married couple, that if she's married to a Kohen and then Chas V'Shalom she's raped, she becomes what's called a Zona. The Torah says, we're going to get to it in two weeks around. Parsha Zemor. And that is Isha, Grusha, V'Zona, Lo Yikach. That a Kohen can't marry a Zona.
Yeah, but what happens if a woman is captured in her acres? She wasn't raped.
So that's the case of our Mishnah. But she says Tahorani. She testifies to the fact that despite the fact that she was captured, she was not Niv'eles, she never had this kind of relationship. And the Mishnah says Nemenes. Again, even though a Shvuya, as a matter of rule, is possible to a Kohen, in this case she can marry a Kohen because she's believed to say that she wasn't violated. And why is that so? Shapesh also a Peshahita. There's no independent evidence that she was a Shvuya. We only know she's a Shvuya based on her own envision. And therefore, she has a cheskas kshera kashus lakuhuna until we find out that she's psul lakuna. Well, why do we want a pasul lakuna? Because we have evidence that she's a shvuya, but we have no evidence that she's a shvuya. All we have is her own admission. So that gives her a pesha asar, who a pesha hitir, when she testifies that she wasn't violated, and therefore she's allowed to marry a Kohen. However, in Yesh Edim Shenishbeis, if we have testimony independent of her confession that she was indeed a shvuya, v'hi omeres tahorani, and she claims that she didn't have a be'ila, ein enemes. Why? Because a shvuya has a cheskas zona until we have a very strong proof to the contrary, and that strong proof requires either Edim or a Peshasa Peshahita, but she doesn't have neither Edom nor a Peshasa Peshahiti.
Why does the Peshasa Peshahiti work? Because her.
That's what the Gemara is going to discuss. Okay. So give me. We still have a few minutes, right? So give me a few minutes. Okay? Because the Gemara is going to first say the Peshasa Peshahiti is based on Xeris HaKosav, then the Gemara is going to vacillate and say, no, it's based on a Svara. But the Mishnah concludes by saying the following. The Imishin Nises, what happens if after a woman testifies that she's what do you say?
Tahora or Gruja.
That she's Tahora, correct. And then she gets married. Is Li Achar Shin Nises al Pidvareha, because she had a Peshasa Peshiter. Now Bo Eid. What happens to the Edom come now? In other words, do the Edom now testifying that she was a Shvuya, or in the first case in the Mishnah that she was an Eishes Ish, do they now undermine her Nemanus of Peshasa Peshiter retroactively? And we have to break up the marriage. Let's say this woman, based on her Peshasa Peshiter, got married to a Kohen. Mm-hmm. And now, lo and behold, after she's married to the Kohen, and the chief rabbi was Masada Kedushin, and lo and behold, two Edom come in and testify, wait a minute, this girl's a Shvuya. No, but we already believed her because of a Peshasa Peshiter. Okay, that's because we didn't have any evidence, but now we have the evidence. So, Iglai Milsa, now we see that we mistakenly granted her this special status and nemonus of a Peshasa Peshiter. Says the Mishnah, Harei Zolo Teitze. Once she's already married, we're not going to break up the marriage and force a divorce because she was married by Heter. And the Gemara is going to try to explain why is this so? Okay, so she's married, but she was only allowed to get married because of the Peshasa, which now we clarified she didn't have. Amar Rav Asi, Minayin, Le HaPeshasa ShePeshiter. We're now being matir a woman who by her own confession was married. She has now a cheskes eishes ish, which she herself confesses. And now you're going to be matir an eishes ish without a get, without edim, just because she has a peshasar? We minayin, how do you know such a thing? So the Gemara answers, shenemar, it's a pasuk in the parsha of Ma'anes and Motzi Shemra. What does it say in the parasha of Motzi Shemra? It says the following, that the father comes out to Bezdin, and he says the following. I'll read to you the whole pasuk. It's a parsha which only the Gemara only quotes a fraction of the. Is this from Kitetze? Just 1 second, or is this from Mishpatim? I just want to double check that. Where's the Torah? Or yeah, this is from Kitetze. So he says the following: Es biti nasati leish hazeh leisha. I married off my daughter to this man. Vayisneh, and he hates her. Vihine, I'm just reading the psukim. Husam alilas dvarim. He's creating this falsification, this libel against Halema to say lomatzasi lebitcha visulin, that she had some sort of illicit relationship before the marriage. Vi'ela bisule biti, and I will prove that he is lying because here the bisulin. And he brings out the sheets with a dam. So the Gemara says that. When the pasuk says "es biti nasati leish," what does that mean? Leish, he has not yet told us who this man is. Leish is a generic term. I married off to a man, not to that man, but to a man. At that point, asara means that she's not allowed to marry anyone, because anyone that she wants to marry might be a relative of her husband. So at this point, she's not allowed to marry anyone. And then it says hazeh. And why did the Torah say hazeh? Because the Torah wants to say that not only is her father believed to aser her on the entire world, but hazeh hitira. He's matir her. And he says that this man is allowed to marry her because he's the Makadesh. So it means the father is believed to be mater his daughter, even though she had a status of an Eishes Ish. And the answer is HaPesh Asa, HaPesh Yitir. How do we know that she was married off? It was because he, the father, said, "Es biti nasati le'ish." I married her off to this man. Now I have here a footnote. He says, "Kevon de'eno mafarish lemi kidsha." In the first stage, he said le'ish, who oser es bito al kol ha'olam shekshem shebiyado lekadsha kach yeshlo nemonis lomar shekidsha. Just as the Torah gave the father the ability to marry off his daughter, again if she's a ketana or a nara, so too the Torah granted him the credibility to claim that he in fact exercised his rights and married her off. And now it says Laish, we don't know who the husband is. Kol she'einonu yodim lemi, he has surah al kol ha'olam, she's prohibited and enjoined from marrying anyone. Shema ish acher hi. Okay, I mentioned a relative. You scratch that. As long as she's getting married to anyone but that one individual, that's an Isra Eishes Ish. And therefore, she is Asura Al Kulei Alma. We don't know who the husband is. So this is a famous Gemara in Nazir about a man who sends a shliach to marry a woman for him. And the Gemara says that if the shliach can't tell the mishalech exactly which woman he married on his behalf, then any woman that he marries might be the sister of his wife. Achos Ishto. Oh. So if the shliach doesn't come back to tell him exactly who he married off, because the mishalech didn't specify, then the Gemara makes the takana that he has to specify which woman he wants to marry, but initially there was, in any event, HaPesh Asa, HaPesh Yitir. So now the Gemara says, this is to answer your question, Aaron, lovely crop. I don't even need a pasuk. Very nice, impressive drasha that you have here, but who needs it? It's totally superfluous. Why? Svarahi. I can derive this from logic. Hu asura, v'hu sharela. Meaning you believed him to say that she's asura. Then how can you stop him midway, dead in his tracks, and say, well, I'm going to believe you only li'isur. Once you believe me li'isur, you mean you're giving me, granting me credibility. Then give me the credibility to claim that this was the person to whom I married her off, and therefore she's muteres for anybody else except for this person. We can't believe him halfway. So the Gemara says, you know, you're right. I don't need this drasha in order to establish a pesha osa pesha yitir. I can derive it from logic. Eloki yitzur kra. Why do I need this pasuk as biti nasati lishazeh? How do we know that if a person married off his daughter when she was a ketana or a nara shenem lesser as bito minat Torah, that the Torah gave him per the authority and the ability to aser his daughter on the whole world, because he testifies in front of a bezdin that he married her off, shenemar as biti nasati leish, which means that the Torah is saying that not only is a father able to marry off his daughter, but he's also believed to testify in front of Beis Din that he in fact exercised his rights and married her off. And therefore she's Asura on the whole world. And now you'll ask me, so why is he believed when he says Hazeh, and he's Matir Ha, to this man? The answer is that I know from Svara. And that is that Kishem, to the same extent that we believe in Liosra, then we have to believe in Latira. And that's called the Svara of HaPesha Asar, Hu HaPesha Hitir. No, but now it comes out, I don't need the extra word Hazeh. And the Gemara is going to raise that problem now, Hazeh Lamali. And the answer is going to be for next week, Mi Boile Lichidetani Rabbi Yona. So we're going to learn Tani Rabbi Yona next week. And then we'll have an answer to what the word Hazeh is coming to say. And initially we thought Hazeh was teaching me HaPesh Asa HaPesh Yitir. But now we said that HaPesh Asa HaPesh Yitir is me Svara, and if I don't need this superfluous word Hazeh. What were you going to say, Aaron?
That's not the word. I? The Svara is not one.
This that, I or that yeah,
I?
Okay. That,
when they say it's a svara, I wouldn't necessarily agree with them, because we just spent, you know, the earlier couple dafs saying that anyone can, any single person can not give testimony to sway to one way or the other, but they can throw like a chashash onto it, and then now we're, the Beis Din puts up his hands and say, okay, we have to clarify the matter. I would have said here also, just him testifying that she was married doesn't mean she was, doesn't mean she wasn't. It just means, hey, her status is questionable, let's figure it out. I wouldn't have, they're saying we believe him to matir her because we
can't believe him halfway. You can't say we believe le'esor but not lehet.
Exactly.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying,
no?
why do we even believe him to be ma'aser her? He's just throwing it to doubt her status. Just
okay.
Like
okay, I agree with you. He's putting her status into question.
Right.
But now he goes ahead and he says that I can tell you that she's muteris.
But that means we have to believe him to master her.
Well, again, to whatever again, it's always going to be relative. You know, to whatever extent we believe him, we should believe him all the way. In other words, he can't stop a person midway in his sentence. He can't say, well, you know, we believe the ratio of your statement, but we don't believe the safety.
Just like how with documents that we learn. That
want to walk me just to
sure.